Jordan Reed and his pack of dogs are professional rat hunters. They have drive, talent, expertise, and a game plan shaped by long experience. They are the varsity team. What about the rest of us JV third stringers? Can working dogs do meaningful pest control on our farms and ranches, even though we're probably a little less intense about it? Welcome to Farm Dog. This is Farm Dog, the podcast about the working dogs of farming, ranching, homesteading, and rural living. Farm Dog is presented by Goats on the Go, a national network of independent business owners who provide sustainable weed and brush control for their customers using goats. Want to put goats to work on your vegetation problem? Interested in launching your own goat grazing business? The place to start is goatsonthego.com. Welcome to Farm Dog. I'm your host, Aaron Steele, and I'm thrilled that you've tuned in here to listen to part two of our conversation with Jordan Reed. If you missed episode 33, I'd highly recommend that you go back and listen to that so that you can catch part one and get a full picture of the story that Jordan tells us about rat hunting with terriers and other breeds of farm dogs. It's been a really fun conversation with Jordan, and I'd love for you to get the whole story. Also, after you take a listen to this episode today, I'd invite you to check out our new website, farmdogpodcast.com, that will serve as a complement to this podcast going forward. There you can leave us some comments. You can listen to these episodes directly if you like on the website. And you can even follow the progress of a handful of my dogs on my farm, both livestock guarding dogs, but also my new herding dog, Sweets, and just check out how we're doing and follow along as we try to get Sweets to be an excellent, useful dog on our farm. So once again, welcome, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
The rat dog's job is to find them and also to kill them. It's my job to make the rats run. So there's a missing piece here where what the actual labor of rat catching is. The actual labor and motion of rat catching is physically locating where the rats live or are sheltered. That's using the dogs. And then every imaginable physical labor that you could think of to force the rats into running. And in that running is when the dog's job steps back in to run out and catch it. So this work could include anything from homemade smoker units, chainsaws been converted just to blow two-stroke smoke. This could be water hoses. If you're talking to any true terrier man, all you have to do is ask to see his shovels. And there's nothing that will make a terrier man more happy in the world than to show off his shovel collection to you. And we can instantly tell how serious you are by the quality of your shovels. So I do an insane amount of trenching and digging, not wildly, scientific trenching, because Rattus norvegicus is a burrowing animal. So the dogs locate a tunnel entrance, and we'll go around, find every tunnel entrance we can, cover it with bricks, paving stones, and then scientifically start trenching every single tunnel backwards till we uncover the rats and the rats start running. Now you can visibly gauge how close you are to rats by the ratometer. The ratometer is a conveniently located tool on the rear of the dog, just above its booty. And depending on the breed of dog, they are usually anywhere from 2 to 18 inches long. And the faster that tail wiggles, the closer you are to a physical rat. So we do a large amount of farm cleanup. So you could call this farm cleanup with dogs instead of rat catching, just removing garbage, just whatever it is, whatever it takes. Early on you described pepper and standing around with BB guns. We use electric fence posts, which I'm sure you're familiar with, fiberglass electric fence posts and plastic wiffle ball bats, just because you can't harm the dogs if you hit a dog accidentally. But, from the moment the rat bolts, then that's where the visual excitement of the rat hunt begins. And a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes work that goes into making rats run. It's a lot of labor. And most people are into the fun part, but not into the work part. So ideally, you're looking for a dog that catches the rat behind the head or the middle of the body and vigorously shakes it until its spine, neck, every major bone in its body has been snapped. And it's a 3-second process, usually, from the time the rat runs out of the hole till it's shut down. When I make videos and I edit my YouTube channel, a good clip is 3 seconds long. Now, there's a lot of misconceptions. If you've never been around farm animals, if you've never been around death, which is something that's missing in our culture in general, bodies are at morgues. You don't see decomposition. You've got a plumbing system, an electrical system. You've got all these systems in a living creature that have to shut down. So a rat can be mortally wounded but not dead, or can still be wiggling and shaking even after it's been killed, but it's dead. So if you're dealing with 4 dogs and 10 rats, you know, a large rat's an average of 1 pound, that's 10 pounds of rats. Now, if you're talking about 200 large rats and 4 dogs, you're talking about 200 pounds of rats. You have to start to think that over time there's damage being done to the dogs, which is true. So if one dog catches a rat, he can shake it. If 2 dogs catch a rat, it's no longer shakeable. And the dog that's closest to the face of the rat takes a really nasty bite. Mm. And by nasty bites, we're talking through tongues, through cheeks, into sinuses, through the nose, through the ears. I've seen we haven't got into the potential dangers, but there's a whole list of potential dangers because I've experienced probably every one of them while hunting. But the rats can take a lot of damage from the rats. So you need several dogs on your team that have the personality that even if they're being bitten, that their killing style is more to just grab and crush the back of the head or spine. And they just don't stop crushing them until that the rat's dead. And that's a super needed part of the rat team, because at some point it's going to happen. And if you have a dog that shies off due to potentially being bit, what ends up happening is they'll be flicking rats up into the air. They'll grab them, kind of partway shake them, but no conviction, flip them up in the air so that they land and then escape. And if you're talking to a rat catcher, you don't want escaping rats.
Sure. I suppose that actually in an odd way can be less humane, because the dog may have done enough damage in that first grab to injure the rat so it will eventually die, but it doesn't happen quickly then. It runs off and dies somewhere else.
Yeah, and the reason we're doing this is humaneness. It might not sound legitimate to say, why do you do this for humaneness? But if you want to talk about rodenticides and how they work, essentially they cause days to weeks of suffering while either the blood is thinned or some other physical process is happening to the rat that's extremely painful and also potentially is damaging to any other domestic animal or wildlife it comes in contact with during that process. So there's a death and continual death down the line to your raptors, occipiters. Owls are extremely sensitive to rodenticides, as well as a lot of other creatures. And if you compare days or weeks of suffering to a 3-second shake and neck snap, a three second neck snap is definitely the way to go for a clean kill. I don't think you can get a cleaner kill than that for a more honorable death, if you say, than a terrier to a rat.
So tell me what this is a very American thing to ask, right? Because we always want to know about trophies and the biggest and the most, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the most rats that you've killed in a day with 3 or 4 dogs?
So, I'm going to preface this by saying what I do is a very small piece of a very long tradition, and that I'm not anything special. I'm just a chauffeur.
Sure.
I would say that there's people that came before me, and I've kind of started 10 years ago before Barn Hunt and some of the, you know, I'm happy to talk about that, but the sport fake versions of things that are real life necessities. I couldn't find anybody that was catching rats or get any information from anybody in the United States. Since I've started, there's now multiple working rat packs in the U.S. And not that I want to say I renaissanced it, but I would say I took it public. You know, I took it off the farm and made it public. And that's definitely affected, made positive effects. The reason I add this in is because there's in England and other places in Europe, catching rats with dogs is still a perfectly legitimate form of pest control, where in the U.S. it's either brand new, considered brand new and breathtaking, or extremely outdated. And so there's teams of guys that go into like waste control, waste collection centers, like where the garbage trucks dump the garbage and it gets sorted. In England, they go in at night with the use of tractors and they catch hundreds and hundreds of rats on a consistent weekly basis. And so your environment, the amount of food and habitat for the rats is the biggest thing. I've caught in excess of 300 on a dairy farm, and all of my hunts last 3 to 4 hours. So I've caught in excess of 300. Anytime I catch more than 50 is a what I would call a big catch. 25 is a big catch. If you have more than 25, that's a pretty serious rat problem. Most of my small farms I go to, I catch 2, 6, 8, 10, 12. That's a lot harder to find a farm where you can catch 200 than you think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In full, and those are full on infestations. Basically, where I'm pulling up to the farm, I'm watching rats run. Like they have no
wow.
fear. You know, they're coming and going. They're, you know, they're moving and they're not even worried by people or any activity.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider your rat hunting to be recreation? Do you consider it to be a business? Do you consider it to be pest control? Is it all three blended in one?
It's definitely all three blended in one. I started it as a hobby and now it's kind of, and, but I'm very good at what I do. So I am, I mean, and if you talk to a pest controller about rats, a pest controller can tell you all about legalities, this poison, this and this application. They can tell you very, very little about, a really good one can tell you, like, I can tell rats have been here and stuff like that. But, you know, the amount that I know about rat biology and behavior that I can tell you just going and looking at a farm, even without dogs, is mind blowing at this point. That how much I've learned about where they live. I can just go and I can ask somebody, I bet you have rats here, don't you? Just from looking, and I just automatically know now.
And do you think that's because of your own curiosity and your own personality and desire to learn, or do you think that's because primarily because you want to give your dogs good work to do? You want to give them good opportunities, and in order to do that, you have to you have to know your stuff.
I'm going to give you a silly answer. It's because I'm dogged in pursuit. It's because of my personality, which is very stubborn. And also because I really love terriers that need work. And so I had to learn that to be get good at it. So this is the fun part. Like, this is the experiment where, how about I send you my four dogs? You can go to the farm the day before me with the dogs, my dogs, see how many you catch. Then I'll go the next day with my dogs and see how many I catch. I guarantee you, I'm going to catch more rats than you with the exact same tools, the exact same location, and the exact same dogs. My experience is what I have that's valuable, and the dogs are my most valuable tool. A shovel is the next.
Sure. What would you do if there were no rats?
Oh,
Would
I
you give
love
up on
hunting.
terriers?
No, not at all. I would hunt nutria and other invasive species games. At this point, I just really love the terriers and the hunting. I might cut back on the number of dogs or the style, move into a little less performance-based dogs and move into more relaxed dogs. I've spent a couple years living in Southern Oregon and locations that didn't have high rat densities, and so I didn't have the work. And so it went from being when I lived in this certain geographical area, I went twice a week. I knew every farmer everywhere to, moving to different places on the West Coast, and I still have the same reputation, but not the same closeness to the locations. And so sometimes it's more work than it is fun to, it becomes work. And, I don't make money off of this. I'm a sheep shearer. It helps support my dog habit, but I'm really doing this for the dog. So if it stops being fun for me, then, I'll put that experience in my back pocket and I'll have a couple terriers in my yard, but I doubt they're going anywhere.
A while back here, the audience won't have heard this, but we had an internet glitch, and when we recovered from it, you said, we've only scratched the surface. We haven't even gotten to the fun part. So tell us what this is an audience full of folks who are used to using dogs or interested in using dogs to solve problems on their farms, to help them be more productive and to do ordinary tasks, but do them in a more rewarding way with dogs. So, what does this audience need to know about rat hunting in particular, but terriers and pest control and that sort of thing with dogs?
So I think that everybody does things for different reasons. So we might both enjoy rat hunting, but for very different reasons. So my very favorite thing on a rat catch is a nice long run at full speed, like a snatch and grab. Think of like a pole vaulter. They're running down, running down, do the thing. It's a whole continuous process in a short period of time. So visually, what really makes me excited is watching my dogs running and catching rats on the run. And that's what I go to see. What I learned from catching rats and every other form of hunting that I did is that when I go to catch rats and I go to a location that I know has rats, that I get more action than any other form of hunting that I've ever been in. Now, I like to hunt deer and I love sitting still and being quiet and meditative for hours. That's totally its own form of excitement. But when it comes to hunting dogs, if you're sending out hounds, you might be hours in chasing that hound for seeing one game animal, or just collecting the dogs again with never seeing a lion, a bear, a coon, whatever it is. When you're going to a farm that you know has rats that you've scouted, you're in for a lot of breathtaking action. And, that's not counting the work. There's a lot of work that you don't see if you watch a YouTube video and you just see the best action we caught on film. But, it's just awesome. I don't want to call it, I want to call it controlled chaos. The amount of controlled chaos with, you hit that pocket in the tunnel and rats start popping out and jumping. And there's one dog grabbing a rat in midair while the rat leaps, tosses it, it's shaken to death, tosses it up in the air. Another dog grabs it before it even hits the ground and is reshaking it. While that first dog has now caught a second rat without the first rat it caught ever even touching the ground. And you're just like, all in the span of a 1.2 seconds. And the visual aspect of that, and then the enjoyment of the dogs. So it's the way that a golden retriever jumps into a pool after a tennis ball, just the full-on body-led enthusiasm is what a terrier lends to chasing a rat. When it sees that rat, that dog gives every ounce of its conscious energy to the pursuit and catch and destruction of that rat. And it is amazing to see that level of commitment. And I think that really excites me is watching the dogs commit at a very high enthusiastic level that you can't force them to do it. They're willingly engaging in it for no other, I wouldn't say it's hatred. I would just say it's passion. I don't say terriers hate rats. I would say that they have a passion for catching and dispatching them that's unrivaled in every kind of predator-prey relationship that I've experienced firsthand.
Is there a style that's kind of important, at least to the aesthetic of it? So, you know, in other forms of hunting with dogs, any retriever might go and retrieve that duck the same, you know, with the same effectiveness, but the one that just sprints to the water and is 8 feet out over the water surface before it ever gets wet and crashes in and swims like a champ, like for some reason that is just more enjoyable. And you could say the same thing about a pointing dog. You could say the same thing about a herding dog that works with style, even though it gets the job done in exactly the same way as another dog. Do you see that? Like, describe a stylish rat terrier or a stylish terrier dog.
I would say that they have working styles. I don't know if I have a style in particular that I like. I definitely like athletic, agile dogs as opposed to bulldoggy muscle dogs. But there's something to be said. I mean, having a Patterdale Terrier that sits in a rat hole with its head in the rat hole and you just see its tail going and you never know what's going on. And it just looks like it's sitting with its head underground. But 10 minutes later, you finally get tired, pull that dog out, and it's got a pile of 10 rats in that hole that it's methodically killed through without ever making a sound. It's amazing. You would never even know till you pull him out and there's this huge pile of rat. He's just been methodically crunching every single rat that was in that hole. But there's also something to be said for that dog that can spin on a dime. I mean, I had a dog named Dolly Girl that's deceased, who could pick a rat up by the scruff of the neck at a full run. And she would then carry it to the largest open space that she could find. That was a frustrating trait, but the ability the ability of her to pick the rat up with two canines at a full run, with the rat at a full run, to then deposit it out in the middle of a space, just as she could lay down and like look at it and be like, haha, I got you. that style that she had to do that, that athleticism to catch it with that dainty touch was mind blowing to me. So I prefer dogs that have a skilled touch as opposed to just like a grab them and smash them. But the grab them and smash them definitely has a place on the rat team. Don't get me wrong. And it's its own style, but I don't know if they're pretty. I think efficient is more important than stylistic. So, you know, you'll get a moment when 15 rats run out and you've got four dogs. And if your dog is only concerned about one rat that's in its mouth, you're going to lose a lot of rats. But if you have a dog that has the ability to pick targets, hit them, kill them, I would think that's the kind of the efficiency would be the style I'm looking for.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. You've got a pack of dogs specifically for this purpose. You're very strategic. You go looking for the rats. You turn stuff over. You do a lot of work yourself. You even do a scouting trip to scout things out first. Does that mean that the average farmer or rancher or homesteader that's listening to this podcast right now, they're not going to have any luck controlling rats and other pests on their little farmstead or even their big ranch with one or two terriers that just kind of live on the porch and wander around at will, just doing whatever they want to do? Or is having one or two terriers on your farm an effective way to control pests?
So I'm going to answer your question without answering your question, like always. Here. So we're actually going to talk about what's the differences of terriers? What kind of different terriers do we have? So we covered it a little bit in kind of the first segment, but I would say there's some qualifying factors, and I'm just going to make labels and then we'll talk about the qualifying factors. So I'm going to say we have farm dogs, sporting dogs, and working terriers.
Okay.
And I would say that any particular terrier could fit one or all, but it's more than likely to fit better in one. So I would say a general farm dog is a dog that's pretty happy on the porch, pretty happy just following you around. It may actively chase or kill a rat that runs. You know, if a rat runs it right in front of it, it's going to chase it and kill it. But more than likely, it's person-oriented or lifestyle-oriented. Your sporting dog would be a dog that is always disappearing off the porch and looking for the rats itself. But after three rats, four rats, five rats, it gets tired. The working terrier, once it finds a rat, will chew the tree down to get the rat before it ever comes back to the porch. And that's not what makes it working. That's just kind of like a descriptive level between the two. Farm and sporting terriers are fairly easy to farm. Fine. Most of my dogs that don't make the cut go to as farm dogs or sporting dogs. What a good terrier or pair of terriers does on a farm is that, especially with the Norway rats, this goes right back to the biology. So we're going to, you know, tie in these loose pieces. Why are we talking about rat biology when we're on a podcast about dogs, right? Mm-hmm. So because they sit close to the food, breed, and aggressively kick out the young, what you're going to have is a continual succession of rats spreading out from a central location on the farm where the food and habitat for the rats is. So if you have a pair of terriers, whether it's sporting or not, that helps catch rats for you, they'll start eliminating that population when that population gets kicked out, when they're juveniles, and before they've successfully colonized another location on the farm that has food and habitat. So essentially, they'll keep your population from hitting an infestation level. So when we talk about managing rats, we're trying to eliminate the infestation back down to a manageable breeding population that kind of comes and goes seasonally, but basically never gets to this big giant boom again. So sure. I think that the fear of rats causes a lot of people to think that they have a lot bigger rodent problems than they have. And some people legitimately do. But, you know, if you see one rat, it doesn't mean you have 100. If you have a big pile of rat poop, it doesn't mean you have 1,000 rats. It's 100% dependent on the food. So you can successfully help to curb the rat population or the rodent population on your farm with a pair of good dogs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love the three categories that you mentioned because I can kind of visualize that. If you have that last category, the actual working dogs, the ones that are seeking it out all the time, it almost would be dangerous to not have control of them, to let them run crazy.
So here's a statement that gives relevance. So I will not let some of my dogs off a leash without a shovel. So if I don't have a shovel in my truck, I won't let them off a leash because they might go down a hole and are essentially irretrievable without the proper gear. And they could find something to hunt that I never imagined was there. When you get into that level of dogs, training them to be safe with chickens, poultry, livestock, you know, it's not unusual for a quality working terrier puppy to kill some livestock. So I've lost several sheep to working terrier puppies.
Wow.
So, you know, you got to remember when you get into the higher levels of drive and stuff, that it has to be trained and managed. These dogs aren't, I wouldn't say trained, I would say they're managed. So yeah, I mean, that I don't let my dogs run around unsupervised. I mean, they might be loose out in the yard, but they're not unsupervised. I don't leave the farm and they're loose. They're kenneled or they're crated when I leave.
Right. So I think that that is really important to know, because as rural dwellers and homesteaders and farmers and ranchers, some of us, we fall into this idyllic, we're trapped by this idyllic view of how the farm should be. And you should have this, you know, herding dog that lays on your porch until you tell it to go round up the sheep. And then you've got a livestock guardian dog who fits the part visually, and this big white fluffy dog that just automatically knows what to do, and it can come and go lay on your couch at night, but then still go out and guard the sheep. Reverse that: lay on your couch during the day and then go out and guard the sheep at night. And with a terrier, like the temptation is to think, well, yeah, I can have this dog that is both my lap dog and pet dog, and when I'm not busy petting it, it's just out wandering around controlling rats and other pests. So I think that it's really helpful to define them in those three categories. If somebody wanted like that sporting, that dog in the sporting bucket, where could you find that in the U.S. today? Or is it a matter of just trial and error?
It's both. I mean, I would say if you talked to a working terrier guy and you said that's what you wanted, he would give you one of the puppies he considered a cull. Now, I don't want to use that word lightly, but just not genetic material that he wants to go with. The problem is your average person that's breeding a terrier, show, farm, whatever it is that they're breeding it for that, which eventually eliminates all of the working characteristics and ability. Where if you breed for working characteristic and abilities, only a few of the dogs are actually going to possess them at the level you need, and the rest of them actually fit that the lower categories. So I think you can get one of those from somebody who breeds good working terriers, and you just be clear about what you're looking for. I struggle in public to, I refuse to tell people what breed my dogs are, because they see this maybe a cute dog on the end, a cute brown wire coated dog on the end of a leash that looks like a, you know, miniature Chesapeake Bay retriever. And really it is a gnarly little Patterdale. You know, and I struggle to be honest with people about what breeds are, because I know that the minute they get home, they're going to be Googling and looking for a puppy just based on how that dog looked at the end of my leash.
Right.
And, but I think it's not that hard. I think it's a lot harder to get a good working one than it is to get a good farm one or sporting one.
Right. Yep. I know that I often draw like bird dog analogies, but I mean, I'm just a foot hunter. I don't trial my dogs. I don't need a dog that runs like crazy and covers miles and miles and miles. But the folks who are breeding those kind of dogs have to produce lots and lots of puppies in order to get the dogs that run like that to the standard they need. And in the process, they're producing a lot of dogs that would be great for the average foot hunter. So I think the analogy, the point you're making
it's
is
same. That... It's the same. Yeah, it's the same. And then, you know, with rescue dogs, it's totally hit and miss. If you're dealing with a terrier rescue, you know, most of the rescues are mind-bogglingly numb in terms of what true terrier characteristics are. You know, it's like, we have a contract. It cannot be used for any hunting. And then if you work with somebody that says, hey, I've got this one, I know it's not going to be happy in a pet home, the chances are it might be working quality, but it's totally hit and miss. There's a lot that goes into the making of a rat dog, which we haven't talked about. How they're raised, how they're handled, you know, that kind of stuff to acclimate them to the proper environment, whether that's just a regular farm and family or a performance hunting home. And you're missing a lot of that with rescue dogs as well, because you don't know what socialization and handling that they've been given as a whole.
Great jumping off point. So give us some tips on how to make a working terrier, and we're starting from the point where we know we can't change genetics. So we've got this genetic material that we have to work with. So how do we make the most of it for our needs?
The best way to start a rat dog is it's a game and it's a play. So you don't ever want to force, this is a very common American mistake. If the dog hasn't shown the instincts by the age of 6, 9, 12 weeks, here, throw it a feeder rat, throw it a live feeder mouse. If it doesn't kill it, it's a dud. That's a very common American terrier man attitude. And my attitude is really different. My attitude is take a good dog, wait, bring it along, hold it back. By all means, keep a young dog away from a live rat. Instead, what I'm going to do is try to get a quality puppy that I know from somebody I know that I've seen its parents. I'm more interested in a puppy that's, if I'm looking for a farm dog, a hunting dog, that whatever dog it is, this is the same. Whatever characteristics you're looking for, don't look for a breed. Look for a similar situation. Look for a farm. Look for parent dogs of that have the characteristics you're looking for, the energy level, the drive, and pick a puppy from that situation regardless of the shape, the size, or the drive, or the color, or the breed. Start with the good puppy, and then you don't mess around with them till they have real teeth, and even then you start slow because they're not mentally mature. So a bird dog might get scared if you start them on a gun too early. Well, let a 6 month or a 9 month old dog that's still a puppy mentally get bitten by a 1.5 pound rat into its sinuses, and then see if that puppy ever tries to grab another rat again in its life with serious intent to harm. Probably not. It's going to be scared. So what you do is you live trap, you set traps, you create a routine, and you use dead bodies as toys. So whether you go out on the road driving to and from your farm and cut off roadkill tails, raccoon, so anything I want my dogs to engage with, I try to introduce that scent to them as a game. So take my trusty old Felco pruners, pull off that raccoon tail, clip it, bring it home, tie it to a string, wiggle it around on the ground, tie the string over the tree, lift the tail. Now the puppy's jumping into the tree. The same thing with the dead rat. Take that dead rat, wiggle it, let the dog play with it, carry it out to the barn, put it around a hay bale, teach the dog a search command. Teach it to look here, 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 here. It starts finding the dead rat. It starts, all right, you get a play game now. Teaching them to drop it. So that can happen inside the house with toys, stuffed toys. Teaching it to drop is incredibly important. And this ties into handling and sociability too, because I'm really rough on my dogs in their mouths because I never want to get bitten by a terrier going for a rat. And I never want to get bitten by a terrier picking up a dead rat. So there's a lot of stuff that I do that's just kind of acclimating the dogs to be manipulated. That kind of scruffing. Things that other dog owners don't do that are very important for a rat catching dog. But if you start that puppy as a game, and kind of teach it some basic search and drop commands, what it's going to do is turn that game, when that dog turns serious, then you've given him the groundwork for the game that he's playing.
Right.
And at some point, what's going to happen is its genetics are going to kick in or not. And that's when you find out what kind of dog you have. Either it once at some point it clicks in to murder that rat. Its intent changes from play to murderous. And I think it's okay to use that in a terrier rat setting. But that's my favorite part of the integration of, that's my favorite part of a lifespan of a terrier, is watching that light flick where that genetics turns from a instinct to a full on, this is what reality is. And at some point, I do try to keep them from getting hurt. I do try to keep them. I'll take them on a rat hunt And when I see where the rats are running and escaping, I'll try to leash them where the dog has potentially access to them or can visually see them, but doesn't run free. And I might do that until they're 9 to 12 months old and they're trustworthy with poultry and stuff as well. You know, there's other reasons for kind of delaying the drive, but at a certain point that they kick in and they don't care about being bit anymore. And they don't, you don't have to worry about them getting hurt, and they want to participate and are choosing to do so.
Do you ever leash a young dog in and around the rat cover that you're hunting with the rest of your more mature, experienced pack?
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah. You bring them along. Yeah. You just try to keep them from actually getting a rat.
You know, one thing that's interesting is that it doesn't really matter what type of dog I'm talking about with a guest. Oftentimes the words turn on come up when we're talking about a puppy, that there's this magical point when what their genes are telling them to do, it's like everything starts to align and it happens. And you had mentioned that with your terrier puppies. So I know we want to avoid hard and fast rules, but is there an age when you start to start looking for that light to turn on? And is there a point where you say, well, this, how old is a dog when you say, this dog doesn't have it?
So I would say I don't follow the norm when it comes to this. So I would say this could happen anywhere from 6 months to 2 years.
Okay.
There's some of the best dogs I've ever seen have been extremely slow starters.
Okay.
And some of the, you know, dogs that start really early burn out quickly, not necessarily because they burn out, but maybe because they are so passionate and drivey that they get into are much more accident prone. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yep. Absolutely.
So I would say the standard American Terrier man would say, yeah, by 6 months, if it hasn't shown a certain level of drive, that dog's a dud. But for me, at 6 months old, I'm not actually expecting anything at all. I would say by 15 months, if the dog is not exhibiting any serious interest at all, and not so much even in killing, but just for the act of looking and participating. If the dog's just hanging out and doesn't care what's going on with the pack,
Okay.
More than it has to be killing rats.
Right, right. Well, Jordan, you've been extremely generous with your time. I really appreciate it. There's one more thing we have to do. I know you got chores to do, as do I, but there's one thing we have to do, and that is ask you, you've had lots and lots of dogs, not just terriers, but also I know you got livestock guardian dogs and probably some others too. Is there a favorite farm dog in your history, or a favorite farm dog story you'd like to tell us?
I don't have anything that stands out right on the top of my head.
You told us a bunch of good ones already.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I have a favorite farm dog story. Let me think about that. I mean, I hope that we're able to come up with some more questions and topics to discuss. I know I have a few more, even though time is short, so maybe I can think about that and try to come up with a good story.
Well, that's just what I was thinking, because we have not even gotten to your livestock guardian dogs yet. So I'm going to be calling on you again, and I'd like to do another interview with you somewhere down the road, and that'll give you some time to think about some of your favorite farm dogs and some of your favorite things you've seen on the farm from your dogs.
Fair enough. Well, I appreciate your time as well.
Jordan, thanks so much. It was a blast learning about a type of dog that we don't often talk about on this episode or on this podcast. So thank you so much and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Farm Dog. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes, please subscribe, leave us a positive review, and tell someone about it. Thanks.